This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining us on The Headline, Texas Scorecard. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here. And wow, stuff is really starting to happen in the Capitol. If you happen to be in the Capitol, I saw some of y'all there yesterday. You know that committee hearings are taking place, some of them stretching on until the early hours of the morning. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But please let me know, drop in the comments where you're watching from, if you're watching this live. Let me know if you've been to the Capitol, if you've been watching any of the committee hearings so far. I would love to answer any questions about that. But look, we've now more than halfway through the 140-day legislative session, and looks like the House and the Senate are playing a little bit of catch-up, stacking a lot of big priority bills in committee hearings this week, and no doubt the upcoming weeks as well. And we're going to see how exactly that plays out. But when it comes to committee hearings in the Senate, a rule requiring COVID tests, that's right, you have to take a mandatory COVID test before you go enter the Senate, has one of Texas's statewide officials suing another. That's right. Agricultural Commissioner Sid Miller filed a lawsuit alongside conservative activist Dr. Steve Hotze, this week against Dan Patrick in the Texas Senate for a rule passed earlier this year which requires people who visit the Senate gallery or people who testify in Senate committee hearings to go get a COVID test. Now, if you've come to the Capitol this session, they essentially have this military tent outside. They swab your nose, you swab your nose, you wait 15 minutes in a tent while they blow air around you. And you know, my thought is if you didn't have COVID before that, you probably do if they're blowing it around there, but I digress. You need to go get a wristband. This is something that Sid Miller says is absolutely unacceptable. I talked to him earlier this week. He told the Texas Scorecard that, quote, the Constitution allows us to address our legislators, and it doesn't say anything in there I can find about having to take a COVID test. He also added it's not being transparent for one thing, and it's hypocritical. Knowing Dan Patrick, he's probably going to retaliate. A spokesperson for Dan Patrick said, while the lieutenant governor doesn't vote on the Senate rules, quote, he agrees with the unanimous decision of the Texas Senate to test in order to protect the public, the Capitol staff who interact with hundreds of visitors every day, as well as members of the legislature. Now, when the Senate passed these rules earlier this year in January, shortly after they gaveled in, they voted them in unanimously. There was no opposition from any senator. There was an expectation, though, that they would revisit these rules in 60 days. Now, that 60-day mark was actually a couple weeks ago, and since then, there doesn't appear to be a change. So, if you're watching live, let me know. Have you been to the Capitol? Have you taken a COVID test to be able to testify in the Senate? What do you think about that requirement? Is it healthy, or do you agree with Sid Miller that it's unconstitutional? So those are committees in the Senate. In the House, however, you do not need to take a COVID test. Lucky for the hundreds of folks who showed up to the Capitol yesterday to testify on a number of bills being presented in front of House committees. I was at the Capitol yesterday, got a chance to talk to a few folks who were there to register their support for a few bills being presented. Take a look.
Chris Woolsey, you are an elected official yourself, and you're down here to testify against taxpayer-funded lobbying, testifying in support of a ban on the practice. What brings you down here today?
Like I said, my name is Chris Woolsey. I'm a city councilman in Corsicana, and I'm testifying on banning taxpayer-funded lobbying, mainly because it's unfair and it's an unethical practice, and it puts people into two kinds of castes here at the Capitol. You have the connected and you have the forgotten. And so I want to make sure that we're creating a level playing field for citizen advocates who come down here when they testify, that they're not getting squeezed out by big groups like TML, by TAC, by people like them who have that taxpayer-funded base that they can pull from and then use those taxpayer funds against the very people who were forced to pay them.
You revealed, I guess it was about a year or so ago, that TML, the Texas Municipal League, one of these taxpayer-funded lobbying groups, was out there telling cities, essentially, and telling city councilmen like yourself that you need to go out there and shake the money tree. I mean, is that something we're continuing to see now?
Yeah, that's a big part of what TML does. And the event that I went to was an orientation for brand new elected officials. And so what TML does is they propagandize what the Texas legislature does so that they can turn around to small town city councilmen like myself, who really our job is to take care of our communities. Our job isn't really paying attention to what's going on in Austin. And so they present this biased perspective of what Austin is as they try to drive a wedge between local officials and state officials so that they can increase their own political power and they can really create a reason for existing.
What do you say to those that say if we get rid of taxpayer-funded lobbying for cities, that cities will no longer have a voice in the state capitol?
It's very simple. I came to Austin today and I didn't spend a single taxpayer cent. I have the same playing field that every other citizen advocate has, and I think that's part of our job as local elected officials is standing up for our folks in Austin. And so it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on an issue, you can come to Austin just like anybody else. I showed up, I drove, you know, 2.5 hours. I paid my own freight to get here because I care about the job, and this is what we signed up for, is to take on those sacrifices and do what it takes to show up and speak on the issues that are gonna help our folks back at home.
Chris, thank you so much.
Hey, Brandon, appreciate it.
Ruth, what brings you down to the Capitol today?
Well, election integrity, that's something that we saw in a very painful way in the 2020 presidential election, and we need to make sure that we've protected the vote.
Election integrity is the number one priority this session of the Republican Party of Texas. Why do you think right now there's so many people? I mean, there's people all over the Capitol right now preparing to testify in favor of election integrity legislation.
That's correct. Often, you know, you go into the overflow rooms and there's plenty of room. You can sit down and, you know, watch that and do something else on the side, but the rooms are full. So, yes, you're right. This is very important to people, and I'm glad to see that. So I think that one thing, you also mentioned the Republican Party priorities, it's also the governor's, one of the governor's priorities, and I'm thankful for that. On this HB6 that we're hearing today, I would like to ask the author, Representative Kane, if he could restrict the right of the Secretary of State to make changes. We need the legislature for that. And I don't think we need to put that in the hands of one individual, such as the Secretary of State. And keep in mind that this is an appointed position, appointed by the governor. And I see a conflict of interest there.
Last question. Beto O'Rourke is here in the building. He's going to go testify against this election integrity legislation. Do you have a message for him?
Well, it's strange that he would want to testify against election integrity.
Thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you.
David, what brings you down to the Capitol here today?
Principally HB6 by Briscoe Kane, the chairman of the Elections Committee.
This is election integrity legislation. It's a top priority of the Republican Party of Texas. It's even one of the governor's priorities this session. Why is election integrity so important?
Because we still have major holes in our election law. We are subject to having the Elections Division violate or waive election code laws that were put in there to prevent fraud and to make elections more secure. People are nibbling around the edges on a lot of this legislation, and I'm here to try to get specific changes to the bills.
Tony, you're with the Young Americans for Liberty. You're out here today testifying for constitutional carry. Why'd you come down here to the Capitol today to go make your voice heard?
I mean, well, first and foremost, this is my home state. I was born and raised in Texas. My family's from South Texas. Grandparents were born in Mexico, but regardless, you know, these values are very important to us. And so very blessed and privileged to have helped other states get constitutional carry in Kentucky and Montana. And God willing, we can get the same thing done here in my home state of Texas.
It seems like there's a really great turnout. Why do you think people are so driven to come down and make their voices heard on this topic?
Well, I mean, obviously a few different things with recent events, you know, with shootings. Obviously, this is also a big hot topic, political year in terms of, you know, the Democrats hold the White House, they hold the Senate, they hold the House. So I feel like more people are realizing that, like, at the state level is like where work can be done and where work needs to be done. And that's been Yale's focus for quite some time. And yeah, happy to be here and happy to see more people getting involved.
We're seeing a lot of young people, I think a lot of people from Yale and some other organizations down here today testifying. How important is it that young people get involved in these processes right now in state politics and city politics, wherever?
Well, I think the stakes couldn't be higher, right? I mean, as I said, like the state legislatures, like really right now during this time, like for the next 2 years, potentially the next 4 years, like this is like the arena that we have to like defend our issues. So if we want to prevent, you know, gun grabbers, the feds, you know, whoever like coming in, you know, knocking on your door or not and taking your firearms, like, you know, this is the opportunity to take a stand. This is the arena to do so. And yeah, very blessed to work for Young Americans for Liberty. We love to see, you know, young people getting involved. And if we do not, as young people, take a stand for these issues, then who will?
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wes, what brings you down to the Capitol today? If the shirt didn't make it a little bit obvious.
We're here for constitutional carry. They're having it in the Homeland Security Committee hearings right now, and we think this is the year that it's very likely to get through. They've killed it a lot of times before, and I think grassroots has put enough pressure on them that we really feel like it's going to get through this time. So
this is only, I think, the second time in recent history that constitutional carry has even gotten to committee hearing. You seeing a lot of people out here in support of the bill today in the Capitol?
Yeah, there's a lot of us. GOA is really good at getting a lot of people out, and they've done it again. And then we're happy that, like House Bill 1911, James White is the chair of the committee, and he wrote that bill, which he wrote last session too. So we're glad to see. We think that one really has a chance to get through. And then Kyle Biederman has 1238, mm-hmm. which has a lot of support too. So we're here rooting both of those on.
Why do you think constitutional carry has so much support right now in 2021? Is it something that's been building up amongst people?
Yeah, I can tell you, going across Texas, you go to the grassroots groups, the conservative groups, and every one of them want constitutional carry. And that's been growing support. And the realization that we shouldn't have to ask for permission to carry our firearm. So if we're legally allowed to carry it, it's not the government's right to delegate if we can or not, because that's a privilege at that point instead of a right. So,
perfect. Wes, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, one of those bills you heard multiple people discuss was House Bill 6, an election integrity omnibus bill filed by Representative Briscoe Kane, who chairs the House Elections Committee. That bill, a pretty omnibus, pretty wide-sweeping election integrity legislation that our own Aaron Anderson has followed and written about. But essentially, it cracks down on election fraud, cracks down on mail ballot harvesting, where people go door-to-door or try to collect ballots that way. Protects voters from intimidation by people pushing unsolicited assistance, a practice known as voter ambush, clarifies the right of poll watchers to be near enough to see and hear, and actually strengthens penalty for some several election-related crimes. So a lot of election integrity measures in that bill. So it should come as no surprise that those on the left showed up in force, en masse, to oppose the legislation, including our favorite Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke, who skateboarded down to the Capitol from El Paso to make his opposition known to the bill. Well, he didn't really get that opportunity. That's right. The bill actually never really got the chance to be heard. How did that happen? Well, let me explain it to you. Briscoe Kane is the chair of the House Elections Committee. Because it is his piece of legislation, tradition, but not the rules, dictates that when he's presenting a bill, he will give the gavel or control of the committee over to the vice chair. In his case, the vice chair of elections is a radical leftist Democrat named Jessica Gonzalez. Now, Jessica Gonzalez wanted to give another Democrat, Nicole Collier, the opportunity to ask questions of Representative Kane. Now, this was something that Representative Kane objected to, and in fact, he actually had made that known in the days prior to the hearing, saying that if Representative Collier wanted to testify on the bill, she would have the opportunity to do that. She could even go first, but that he would not be, as a practice, taking questions from members who were not on the committee, as Nicole Collier is not on the committee. Representative Kane made that announcement, But then there was a bit of a power struggle. You see, that Democrat vice chair, Jessica Gonzalez, she asserted that she had the power to actually determine who got to speak in the committee, and that she would allow Representative Collier. It was at that point that Representative Kane decided to consult the parliamentarian, take a break, and decided to recess the hearing before they could take take testimony. Decided to recess for a little bit. Well, the problem was it didn't set a time certain to come back. This caused a procedural error that he says is going to delay the bill from being heard this week. Look at his explanation right here when he came back.
You, those in the audience and those in overflow rooms, after consulting the parliamentarian's office, the chair realized that the chair failed to recess to a time certain for reconvening. Therefore, pursuant to the rules, today's hearing has concluded. This means that, even though I wish very much so to continue today's hearing, the rules prevent me from doing so. Please forgive me for my error. On behalf of the committee, I want to extend my sincerest gratitude to all for traveling here today. Thank you. We greatly appreciate it. The chair plans to hear this bill again soon. A posting is forthcoming. We look forward to hearing from you at the next hearing on which this bill will be heard.
Representative Kane says the bill will be brought back to committee, quote, soon, and we'll see when that takes place, most likely next week. But today, actually, in the Senate, in the other chamber, they're hearing their own version of their omnibus election integrity bill, Senate Bill 7. We've got our own Aaron Anderson watching that today, but that's going on right now in the State Affairs Committee. So you do have some action on election integrity happening in both the House and the Senate right now. Certainly a hot-button issue. The number one priority for Texas Republicans. We'll see how that shakes out in the weeks ahead. Now, another legislative priority of the Republican Party, and no doubt conservatives and taxpayers across the state, is ending taxpayer-funded lobbying. Yesterday, House Bill 749 by Mays Middleton, which would ban the practice of taxpayer dollars being used by local governments to lobby the state legislature. This is a practice we've seen happen for years, has been a Republican Party of Texas priority for years, ending the practice. But last session, even though a bill to end taxpayer-funded lobbying passed the Senate, it didn't make it to the House. That means right now, your city, your county could be sending people to Austin to go lobby your state representative and your state senator for things like, I don't know, higher property taxes, less property rights, things that would actually probably be against the taxpayer interest, and you're funding your own opposition there. Well, that bill was heard last night, or rather, should I say, this morning. That's right, the House State Affairs Committee met starting at 8 o'clock yesterday and went till about 6 in the morning today for about 20, 22 hours. Mays Middleton's taxpayer-funded lobbying bill was the last piece of legislation on that crowded calendar. This is certainly an issue that Republican Party primary voters do support, though. In fact, last March, a year ago, 95% of Republican primary voters said on the Republican Party propositions, those ballots when you vote in the primary, you get those questions, 95% of Republican primary voters said they supported a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying. This is something that Representative Mays Middleton tried to pass last session, was ultimately unsuccessful as the House voted it down, but gave this statement to Texas Scorecard last night ahead of the hearing, said, taxpayers are tired of being forced to hire Austin lobbyists that then work against the taxpayers. So many taxpayers took an unpaid day off work to support this bill and make their voice heard that they want it passed into law. I'm thankful for the Speaker and House State Affairs Committee for making this bill a priority. It should be noted that Chris Patti, the chair of the House State Affairs Committee, did vote against Mays's taxpayer-funded lobbying ban last session. Remains to be seen if this is something that's going to be able to get movement out of his committee now that he chairs the House State Affairs Committee, something to be putting pressure on if this is an issue that you care about to your lawmakers in the weeks ahead. In fact, Steve, I think it's actually my dad, is watching, says the matter is simple. There's no justification for taxpayers funding lobbyists who work against them. It's like paying for your opposition's legal counsel. Couldn't have put it better myself. Another big Republican Party priority that was being heard into the early hours this morning, it wasn't just taxpayer-funded lobbying, it was also constitutional carry. That's right, essentially the a law allowing Texans who are law-abiding citizens to be able to carry firearms without going and getting that LTC, that CHL license from the state and having to pay for it. This is a long-time priority of the Republican Party of Texas. In fact, ever since the Republican Party of Texas has been doing these legislative priorities, constitutional carry has been on it. It was actually the first priority that they did back in, I believe, 2015, or 2013 or 2015. It's been a while. And they got a chance to hear four bills dealing with constitutional carry. It's the first time since 2015 that there's actually even been a committee hearing on it. And you had a lot of people coming down to the Capitol to testify on that. Obviously, we talked to some of those people earlier, but you had representatives from Gun Owners of America, Texas Gun Rights, Young Americans for Liberty. I saw some folks from Young Conservatives of Texas sticking it out until the early hours of the morning to testify. Even Republican Party of Texas Chairman Alan West testified, saying, "Our Constitution is our rule of law, and the first 10 amendments of that venerable document contain our Bill of Rights. Those First Amendment rights, such as freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom to assemble, and the right to petition the government for redress of grievance, do not come with any requirement to obtain a permit." Now, that is a message that we heard from a lot of people who were there to testify for constitutional carry. Certainly seems like it has enough strength right now that, who knows, maybe we'll actually see it pass out of committee and get a floor on the vote of the House this session. Again, something that Texas Scorecard is going to be following very closely. But I want to thank everybody. Look, if you came out to the Capitol yesterday or if you sent in electronic testimony, thank you so much for getting involved, getting active with your state government, our state government here of We the People. And we at Texas Scorecard try to make it easy for you. We try to write stories about exactly what's going on in that building so that you're able to be informed and be able to be engaged. We've also got some tools on our website. We've got the Texas directory up at texasscorecard.com where you can find your lawmaker and find out how to contact them. We've got their phone numbers, their social media handles, all that listed there. So it should be really easy for you, as well as the bill tracker, so you can get an idea of where those party priorities are in the process. All of that is at texasscorecard.com. I want to thank everybody for watching. Tiffany in Deer Park, Crystal in Midland, everybody tuning in down there. I can't even get to all of them. And I want to encourage everybody, as this process begins to get more and more busy and more committee hearings are being scheduled, please tune in on Monday to This Week in Texas, where our Capitol correspondent Jeremy Kitchen is going to preview the week ahead to the best of our ability. I can tell you there's a lot of stuff that happens in the moment, a lot of stuff, a lot of fast-moving pieces right now, but we want to help you get informed, so tune in on Facebook Live on Monday where Jeremy Kitchen is going to give you a preview of what's going to be happening in the building coming ahead. Well, thank you so much for joining again. If you have any questions, you're watching live, please feel free to drop them down in the comments. For now, thank you for watching. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.